Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
My name is Melissa Harris Perry, and this is The Takeaway. It's so good to be with you today and every day. Now, over the weekend, New York shared data showing that multiple cases of the Omicron variant, now up to at least 12, have been detected in New York. Then on Monday,
we in New York City have decided to use a preemptive strike. As of today, we're going to announce a first-in-the-nation measure. Our health commissioner will announce a vaccine mandate for private sector employers across the board. All private sector employers in New York City will be covered by this vaccine mandate as of December 27th.
Now, that's outgoing New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. And it's worth noting that right now, about 70% of New York City is fully vaccinated. That's much higher than the 60% U.S. rate. So vaccinations might not be a pervasive issue in New York City, but the mandate could influence other cities or states across the country to follow in its footsteps. And that, of course, could prompt backlash. In early November, 11 states filed lawsuit against the Biden administration for trying to impose a vaccine mandate similar to the one New York City just announced. And last week, a federal judge halted Biden's vaccine mandate for U.S. healthcare workers. Undoubtedly, partisanship explains much of the national division surrounding vaccine mandates. But this divide may highlight another important policymaking challenge: the contemporary American reluctance to contribute to the public good. I mean, maybe now is an appropriate time to ask,
not what your country can do for you,
but what can we do for our country? With me now is Greg Gonsalves, who is public health correspondent for The Nation, co-director of the Global Health Justice Partnership, and associate professor of epidemiology at Yale School of Public Health. Thanks for being here, Greg.
Great to be with you, Melissa.
Resistance to vaccine mandates is not a uniquely American phenomenon. We've seen it in parts of Europe as well.
It is and it isn't, because a lot of the sort of anti-vax movement is an American export. Yes, there are homegrown sort of resistance to vaccine mandates, not just in the U.S., but the movement, anti-vax movement, is global, and it's also coming from the same sort of ilk of politicians across the Atlantic as we see here in the United States.
So it's like the gap. We created and exported it all over the world.
Yes, sadly.
Okay, yeah, on many levels. So I've been wondering about if part of the challenge here is it's just the language of public, or even thinking or framing this in a public sense. I mean, Greg, I don't want to go like too far into this metaphor, but I just was thinking about, you know, victory gardens in the context of World War II, and the notion that when the nation was faced with a national crisis, the federal government could call on ordinary Americans to make sacrifices and contributions to the war effort. But in this case, really from early on, both the federal government didn't seem to ask for those kinds of sacrifices. And when it did, when it asked for folks to get over their vaccine reluctance and get vaccinated, not only for themselves, but for others, man, the pushback was swift and highly individualized.
Well, first of all, we don't have to go back to World War II to think of examples of where people sort of line up for vaccination and do it willingly and don't think for a second about it. Anyone who has a child, or anyone who's been a child, so it means everyone, has gone to elementary school or junior high school or high school in the United States where mandatory vaccinations to get into school, measles and mumps, rubella, are done every day of every week of every year. We were pretty good at getting vaccinated in the U.S. for childhood diseases, and something happened with COVID-19 vaccines, which is really less about individual hesitancy than sort of using vaccines as a wedge issue for political gain. Even some of the politicians who are vociferously opposed to COVID mandates are now starting to talk about childhood preventable diseases. I mean, it's sort of astonishing to me that something that we've sort of agreed on for decades and decades and decades is now being set up as in opposition to freedom and individual liberty when we didn't think 2 seconds about it before this pandemic.
You said in the Nation podcast that Republicans are describing Omicron as a Democratic plot to bring back mail-in voting. What?
It doesn't make any sense anymore, right? It doesn't make any sense on sort of the sort of logical basis. Nobody invented Omicron, you know, to have mail-in voting 5,000 miles away from where we've seen the variant emerge. And so there's nothing that the Democratic administrations can do at the state level or at the federal level that would not be sort of suspect in any way. This is less about where we were in World War II than a really contemporary conservative phenomenon, which we saw starting before Trump, but really, you know, flourishing last year. We're all tired of this pandemic. We're tired of mask wearing. We're tired of all the restrictions on us. But we don't get out of it unless we all band together for our collective good. And because this is a collective action problem, not about individual liberty or rights.
So the one reason I want to go back to that World War II moment and this kind of idea of collective sacrifice in the public good is my bet, and this is more of a hunch than something I have empirical evidence for, but my bet is that particularly white Americans understood the word public and the public good to represent something different in the 1940s than in the 1960s and thereafter. And that what intervenes in the middle is basically integration, or at least desegregation, and that we can map throughout the South, for example, that you stop seeing investments in public transportation. We can map that there's not another school, public school built in New Orleans, for example, after Brown v. Board until we get to Katrina. And I guess I'm wondering, like, if part of what we're living with in the COVID moment is actually about a 60-year-old legacy of disinvestment from the public sphere once the public was understood as more racially diverse.
If you want to take it in that direction, I completely agree with you 100%. I mean, basically, our whole public health history in the United States is based on exclusion, right? You can go way before World War II to post-Civil War era when an entire set of epidemics was ignored because they were happening to newly freed slaves rather than the white former slaveholders in the South. So we can go through American history and talk about how we sort of obscure public health because of who gets the disease, who doesn't get the disease. So the Victory Gardens and the Greatest Generation was constructed as entirely white. Once you start thinking about why we have a weak social safety net, why we have a fractured healthcare system, why we have no investment in public health, it all comes down to sort of the segregationist impulse. And, you know, Janine Interlandi, when she wrote her essay for the 1619 issue of the New York Times magazine, the reason we don't have national healthcare in the United States has everything to do with race. You know, the idea is that I'd rather go down to defeat by COVID then put a vaccine in my arm. Because, you know, if I have to think about the polis, I have to think of my community as an integrated multiracial community, that's a fate worse than death for some of the United States.
That also suggests that addressing it would require a really different set of arguments. I'm wondering if that's what's at the root of this, then, you know, are things like the New York City mandate what's going to move us in a different direction? Or this sounds terrible, but should we try to trick people that this isn't about mandates? Should we try to have a straightforward conversation about the ways that the polis is, in fact, more diverse?
Well, first of all, the federal mandate's been put on hold by courts, by a Trump-appointed judge in Louisiana. And so I assume Mayor de Blasio's vaccine mandate's going to be taken to court shortly. You know, the mandates have been remarkably effective in getting people vaccinated, even as they've been under scrutiny by some conservative courts and by conservative politicians. I don't know if we can trick people. I mean, my sense is that there are plenty of people in New York City, here in New Haven, where I live, who would like the vaccine but have complicated lives, and we need to get to them and get the vaccines into their arms. Trying to deal with this sort of cascade of misinformation and lies and naked appeals, or even if they're implicit appeals to race by Southern governors and other governors in the GOP, I don't know if we're going to be able to surmount that resistance. You know, the study that came out this week that suggested that voters in Trump counties were 3 times less likely to be vaccinated than those in Biden-leaning counties. It just shows that this isn't about the people there. It's about the politicians that represent them and frame the issues for them in a way that threatens their tribal identity if they dare show up at a vaccine clinic or put on a mask or take care of their neighbor in any way that makes any epidemiological sense.
Yeah, it's a fascinating study, and it's NPR was reporting on this. Our own Brian Lehrer was reporting on this yesterday. These data that are showing counties that were heavily Trump, in other words, 60% or more, are also taking the heaviest hits in terms of COVID deaths, and are the most likely to be unvaccinated. And so that idea then that that in this case, right, you know, maybe you can opt out of public schools into, you know, Southern racial academies, and maybe you have the financial resources to opt out of public transportation into, individual cars, even if that's bad for the environment. But you can't actually opt out of an infectious disease. I'm wondering if that this deep partisan divide will in and of itself turn it around, like that as the unvaccinated are far more vulnerable to serious illness and death, that self-interest alone will be enough to push towards higher vaccination rates.
If we think about health disparities in many of these states that are chafing at vaccine mandates, they had terrible health disparities before the pandemic. There is an acceptance of mass death and suffering even before COVID-19. And yes, it fell hardest on communities of color, but states like Mississippi, Alabama have terrible health outcomes overall. I don't know if the pandemic, the epidemic among the unvaccinated, the sickness that we see in rolling waves in different parts of the country among the unvaccinated is going to be enough to do this. I don't fault Trump voters or Biden voters for the choices they're making. I fault the politicians who are, quote unquote, the trusted messengers who start to create doubt about vaccines, pit vaccination against core values like freedom and liberty, which, people want to be all in for. 2 years, 3 years ago, we didn't have Republican politicians out there arguing against getting vaccinated from mumps, rubella, and measles. Now we're starting to see them veer in that direction as they start to think of all of public health as sort of a left-wing conspiracy.
What about the next pandemic or the next serious wave of this one? Is this kind of misinformation and partisan divide something that can be overcome?
I don't know, but I think, as you suggested, I think we have to talk seriously about our history of public health, healthcare, and how we take care of each other in this country, because it's really tied to our legacy of white supremacy, and it's really crafted how we respond to this pandemic. And unless we deal with these sort of root causes and fundamentals, the architecture of power in the U.S., we are going to be vulnerable, not just to the next pandemic, but the ravages of climate change and everything else that's going to come at us in this new century.
Public health correspondent for The Nation, Greg Gonsalves, is also an epidemiologist at Yale. Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.